Among ministers, we say that once a year, pastor has to preach on forgiveness. It's that important. Often because we ourselves have accumulated so much stuff that we need to forgive. And so in preparation for today, I did a lot of reading. I took copious notes while studying the gospel text that was just read, as well as other texts in the gospels where Jesus talks about forgiveness. I also looked at what other religions have to say about forgiveness. And then I went to my website and I listened to a sermon I gave a few years ago at my church in Indianapolis about forgiveness, in which I talked about my own 30-year journey in trying to forgive my mother. I started to think about how we're supposed to forgive someone if they ask for forgiveness, if someone comes to us. I thought about how oftentimes people are not even aware that they need forgiving, how some don't feel they have done anything wrong. I thought about the situations in which we need to ask forgiveness of others and how difficult that can be. And I started to wonder about the experience of you, the people of this congregation, around forgiveness. And also, I was thinking about my colleagues and my family and my friends and wondering about their experience with the challenge of forgiving. And one particular question came up for me, maybe you can identify with this, is why is it so difficult to forgive others? So I decided to do some crowdsourcing, and I posed these questions on my Facebook pages, both here at the church and my personal one. What has kept you from forgiving someone? First question. Two, who is someone that you just can't seem to forgive? Three, why? And four, what might need to happen for you to be able to forgive them? Whew, did I hear from people? It was amazing, actually. The responses just came rolling in, and I was really humbled by what I was told, what confidences people shared, how people needed to tell about their need to forgive others. So the question that bubbled up to the surface from when I was reading all of these is, how do we forgive someone who hurt us terribly or continues to hurt us when they do not acknowledge their guilt? Okay, everyone understand that? Does that resonate with people? Everyone have that experience in their life presently or in the past? Yeah. How we forgive someone who doesn't even admit they did anything wrong. Okay. So these people who entrusted me with these stories and these things, I need to give voice to them. And so you're going to be hearing from other people and not from me, because I cannot say what they need to say. So, from a young adult male in my Unitarian congregation, he says, I think it's hard to forgive an habitual offender, meaning someone who constantly hurts you or others, then says they won't do it again, and then proceed to do it again. The point is, can you reach a limit of forgiveness? And this is from an Episcopal deacon in New York. I find it hard to forgive when I feel the person just does not understand or take responsibility for what they did to me. If they were to just acknowledge such to me, I could easily forgive. That piece for me, that acknowledgement, is the pebble in my forgiveness shoe. From the wife of a colleague, going through a situation right now where the other person just can't see that what they have done and continue to do is wrong. If they can't admit it, it's pretty much impossible for me to forgive it, because there's no sense of remorse, regret, or even acknowledgement that there has been harm caused. And from a longtime activist friend of mine, intentional cruelty is very difficult for me to forgive. From the mother of my godson in Chicago, the person who, by his absence, hurts my son every day, I don't think I'll be able to forgive him ever. That means his biological father, who is not in his life. And then my sister responded, because she knows Catherine. She says, I understand, Catherine. I don't hate anyone. I cannot forgive my daughter's biological dad either. What would it take if he admitted what he's done and asked for forgiveness? From a writer friend, what kept me from forgiving? Two things. The thought that they did it on purpose to hurt me, and the thought that they're not sorry and would do it again in a heartbeat. Right? So a lot of head nodding there. And this from a clergy colleague who has been a victim of clergy abuse. I have trouble forgiving people who have not shown remorse and or continuing to do what is harmful, or they are acclaimed and not held accountable by others. And then someone from this congregation, sexual abusers, I still hate them. Right? And from a colleague, a chaplain colleague in Cleveland, she goes, Hi, Stephen. I can't seem to find it in my body, my heart, or soul to forgive my Andrew's father. It doesn't seem right to even call him father. He dismissed Andrew out of his life years ago because he didn't want to be bothered. Andrew begged for him to be in his life. It never happened. Then Andrew died. I carry the pain of Andrew dying without a father in his life every day. I think the only thing that may ever cause me to think about starting to forgive him would be to hear him say he knew he made a mistake. He was sorry and suffers the daily pain that I do. Either that or he could drop dead. Hey, these are strong feelings. And then this is from someone in my congregation in New York, where her parents were divorcing. She's from a tight-knit, conservative, Catholic Italian family. And her grandparents, when her father died, just ran roughshod over the family. And she, my friend, went to the cemetery, and on her father's tombstone, it said, Donald Caparella, which was not even the name that he used, beloved son, beloved brother. No mention of father, this is her words, no mention of his children in the obituary. I was insanely angry. I ripped all the flowers from his grave and drove all the way out from Suffolk County, Long Island, to the tip of Queens in a rage. I don't even remember the ride. When I arrived, my grandfather lied about the tombstone, saying it was an accident. My mother got the written form from the cemetery, no mistake. Things did not end well. They have both since passed, and although I feel sorry for anyone who feels it's okay to behave the way they did, I have so much hate in my heart for them. They loved me so much when I was growing up. I was their firstborn grandchild, could never do wrong in their eyes, and then they just turned. I always ask God for forgiveness, because if there is a heaven or hell, I'm praying they are in hell. It's crazy. I can forgive a total stranger, but not the people who once loved me unconditionally. This is what people carry around, and I know you do too. And then from someone in our congregation who said she would be willing to have her name used so that she can help other people, Kat Philpotts. She wrote to me and said, I was molested by my grandfather for several years. He was never tried or made to be accountable for what he did to me, my younger sister, and my cousins. I hated him. Progress, hated, not hate. When he died, I was glad. Glad he couldn't touch me ever again. Glad he couldn't touch anyone ever again. Hopeful that he was paying finally in some sort of hell. As the years have passed, I processed a lot. I've actually healed quite a bit. Rape recovery counseling helped me more than I know how to say. More than that, I've awoken to a different spiritual place. If he would ask me if I would ever forgive him, even just 1 or 2 years ago, I would have said, no, not ever. But now I can begin to imagine a day when I do forgive him. I'm not there yet, and I don't know what or when the change will be, but I can at least imagine the possibility that one day some sort of forgiveness will exist. For now, I just try to keep it from being an active burden. And now from our sister here who said to use her name, Kim Funk. My former husband sexually abused our then 6-year-old daughter. I didn't find out until after our divorce. My struggle with forgiveness lies in forgiving myself as well. I had to forgive myself for not going out of town for work and leaving my children with him. I had to forgive myself for not noticing that anything was amiss. I had to forgive myself for marrying someone who is so depraved. That forgiveness is still an ongoing work for me. As for him, I had to fake it for a long time. At first, we didn't know where he was, so I was saved from killing him. Then, after he had been arrested, tried, and convicted, I still had to live with and parent 2 girls who considered him their father. They understood he was flawed, but they so desperately wanted him in their lives. So I sucked it up and took them for a couple visits to the prison and mailed some crayon pictures from them to him. I always had to be calm around the girls, and I tried to tell them what I called happy daddy stories, to let them know that there were a lot of good times in our lives as well as the bad. Those things helped me to remember that he was human, a seriously flawed human, but human. Another aha moment that I had was one day in church, we were discussing what it really meant to be a child of our Heavenly Father. All of a sudden, I was realizing that everyone is a child of God. Not just me and people just like me, but everyone, including the convicts in prison. That realization was another step on the way to forgiveness. I believe that I shall never fully forgive him or myself for this. I think that is one of those things that the grace of Christ will cover for me. I saw him last year at his parole hearing. The only visceral reaction I had at the time was being startled at how old he had become. I always hoped that I never run into him on the street, because that would test the level of forgiveness I have reached, and I might fail that test. Thank you. You know, things happen in such mysterious ways when you turn everything over to God. You know, I really like, you know, writing sermons in that where I can, you know, just get out there and entertain you and make everyone laugh. But then things like this happen. And it truly is a moment of grace. I have one more story I'm going to read, and it's a few pages long, but I want you to really listen. This is from a man in New York who's now about late 40s that I used to work with, that I didn't know very well, but we worked together for at least 10 years. And this is what he wrote. He said, Dear Stephen, I just happened to see your post on Facebook reaching out on the topic of forgiveness. And now I am sitting with this thought, not knowing if I will write to you or not. As I have been sitting with this memory for years and years and years, It is not a story I tell to many people. And I don't really think I can put into words the whole of this, but something is compelling me to try. I have known you for years and not known you for years, as has been my way, living a half-life, distancing myself from any true connection with anyone. I guess there is something about the anonymity of this that makes me continue. I don't really know. I don't know why I'm doing this. I have always liked you, Stephen, and found you to be a kind, funny, insightful person, and now you're off in the Midwest or somewhere giving sermons. Well, my goodness, anything is possible, isn't it? There's backstory there. If you can use this to help someone around you, then so be it. Maybe there is something precious in that. So here is my story. When I was 9 years old, I was raped and tortured by a man. I have never really described it in that way, so bluntly. I have always avoided those two particular words, thinking if I didn't say them, then maybe it never really happened. But those are the words that would most accurately describe the situation, and I didn't tell anyone for over 30 years. I got away from him, and I buried it and went about my quiet little life. The straight-A student who could have been a doctor or a writer, but deliberately stopped reading and learning. The champion swimmer who could have gone to the Olympics but walked away from the pool at 16 with a record that stands unbeaten to this day. The good son in a troubled family who isolated himself as far away from all of them as geographically possible. I see all the self-destructive choices I have made. I am divorced. I have few true friends. I have battled severe depression for over 40 years, and I am alive. I am still alive. I made my first true friend when I was 40, the only person I have ever told everything to, including four therapists, the only person who knows exactly what happened to me, who knows me inside and out. And he was the most unlikely choice for friendship, different from me in every way possible, and maybe not the wisest choice either. A tough, sneaky, flawed individual, 14 years my junior, but for some reason fiercely loyal to me where it matters. I think, I don't always know, you find friendships where you find them. Well, he said we should go kill the guy. Go kill the doctor. And so I thought about it for 2 years. My mother had a total nervous breakdown when I was 8 and was in the mental ward for a while. When she came out, she was deeply troubled and really not capable of being a functional parent. My father was away, a businessman who was all business. They separated 3 times during my childhood. My adopted sister was emotionally disturbed. My older brother, a bully, yada, 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 a typical Canadian family. And I was the caretaker. I raised my little sister. I cared for my troubled mother. I avoided my brother. And I hated my father. And it was stressful. And by the time I was 9, I got sick a lot. So my mother decided to send me to her doctor for my first adult physical because there was just no reason a child should keep getting sick like this. There must be something wrong. And so I went. He was just so sexy, she said of the doctor. Red flag. But I was 9 and a good boy, and I did what I was told. She sent me to him alone at the end of the day. His receptionist was away, the office was empty. The physical turned to fondling, the fondling turned to rape, and then when I thought that was finally over, he took out his scalpel and he messed me up. When it was over, he said if I told anyone, he would put my mother back in the mental ward and she would never come out again. So I didn't tell anyone. It was the 1970s. Things like that just didn't happen. When I was 18, I took a walk to Deep Cove to kill myself. I climbed a path at the side of the mountain there that led up to a cliff, and I fully intended to jump. But it was raining in a dreary Pacific Northwest sort of way, and even though I was this great swimmer, I always hated getting wet. I hated that first plunge into the water, and it looked so dank and cold and miserable that I couldn't bear the thought of lying there for eternity. And so I turned away. And I'm alive today because it was raining. No other reason than that. And so I walked throughout the rest of my life, silently wishing away time. A nice, quiet guy who no one really knew. I got married, had children, and it wasn't until my oldest daughter turned 9 that I started losing it. I finally realized what a 9-year-old child really was. A child. Go into a park and watch 9-year-old children playing, and you will understand what hit me. And my careful, detached little life finally unraveled completely. Okay, so 2 years after my slightly unstable, good fellow wannabe friend offered to kill this doctor, I decided I wanted to do something to him. I didn't know what exactly. But the next day, I decided I would wake up and search for the doctor on the internet and go to him and do something. I had tried once before to find him, but had no luck. But this time, I decided it would be different, and I would not stop until I found him. And so the next day, I got up and entered his name, and right away, there he was, splashed all over the internet. It turns out he was somewhat famous, known for doing good in the world with a very well-known liberal activist group. And he had died the day before, and his obituaries were everywhere. The day I decided I would finally do something, the doctor died. There is a message there. I read these obituaries over and over and over. They rattled me. This is a man I would have admired in any other circumstances. I could not reconcile this. A monster cannot do good things. It could not be possible, could it? As I read deeper, I found little cracks. He was also known for setting up tents at rock concerts and caring for boys who were ODing on drugs. Well, that made sense. But he was dead, and there was nowhere to focus my rage, and now my best friend was being denied his execution. Oh, this is about forgiveness. I eventually realized the doctor was not the person I was having trouble forgiving. I had had a falling out with my mother for various Canadian soap opera reasons. Among other things, I finally had had one short, limited phone conversation with both of my parents about the doctor incident, and I reacted badly to my mother's reaction, which was, as things often go, not the reaction I was looking for. Not what the child needed from the parent, who was never really the parent. So I completely cut her out of my life for many years. She got cancer. I didn't budge. I was protecting myself. I knew to my core that something was wrong, that something I could not define, some unspoken thing, something from a bleary childhood memory that messes with your mind, makes you doubt yourself in every single human encounter you stumble through, and I could not be around her. It made me literally crazy. Suddenly, I was the problem, and I was always the good son. And then I got divorced. Messy stuff. It makes you reach out in crazy, unexpected directions. I reconnected with my parents. I suddenly had something safe to talk about with my crazy mother, my crazy wife. This was perfect. Nobody knows crazy like crazy. We were able to laugh again. I told them all the divorce dirt. It was great. I told them how I almost lost it one night. My nosy neighbors were meddling in our divorce, in cahoots with my wife. And I was so enraged, I was on the edge of violence, and I knew I would do something or I would snap. So I cursed them. An epic Italian type of curse with big Italian gestures, even though I was a polite Canadian boy. I kind of expected my mother to be concerned for my mental well-being, but, you know, pot calling the kettle crazy here, she just said, "Did you say it out loud? Did you say the curse out loud? You have to say it out loud." That's what I did. This man made me so angry once, I cursed him out loud. And then the next day, he was hit by a bicycle that crippled him for the rest of his life. You have to say it out loud. I got real quiet and ended the conversation abruptly. Got off the phone and sat in the dark for a very long while. Then I pulled up the doctor's obituary. I had remembered something. 3/4 of the way through it, it said in 1980 he had been hit by a bicycle and sustained a back injury that crippled him for the rest of his life, forcing him to give up his practice. So I finally had my answer. What could possibly make someone curse another person so strongly that it actually works? A mother's rage, because she knew. On some level, whether deliberate or through a haze of mental instability or just intuitively, or I don't know what, I just know she knew. And so what exactly does one do with that? Nothing. Nothing at all. I am alive. That's all I know. I am still alive because it was raining and because maybe I am stronger than I think. And I still talk with them, my parents, but about safe things only. And my bad days are better than they used to be. And the world has good in it along with the bad. And that is as it should be because that is life. And my best friend needs my big brother influence now more than ever. Stephen, if you read this in church on Sunday, please pray for him. Please have your people pray for him. Really. And my 9-year-old daughter is now turning 19, and life goes on. With anger or forgiveness, either way, life goes on. The oldest man I know, and so maybe the wisest, has 5 words he says aloud in any circumstance of stress or joy, and they always seem to do the trick. The same 5 words every time. That's all he ever says. Life. 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 And that's my story, Peter. This is the power of our faith. You know, you called me to be your minister, to preach, to teach, to walk with you through your life challenges, to provide pastoral care and counseling. And because of you, in preparation for today, I put that out on Facebook, and this is what happened. This man I don't know that well was able to tell his story, which is part of his journey of healing and part of his journey of forgiveness. Amazing. So before we close, I wanted to share some of the snippets of the messages of hope about forgiveness, of what some of you told me and some of other people around the country about how they've been able to forgive someone who has not acknowledged, okay? This is a therapist friend of mine that I used to act with. She says, you don't have to forget that the event happened. It did. Why ask yourself to rewrite history? Yeah. From an old boyfriend. Holding on to resentment for me is a way of hanging on to the pain of the hurt suffered, which prevents me from healing, changing, and growing. I have to let go of it. He wasn't talking about me, by the way. And a wonderful healer I know in Cleveland, she says, releasing my judgment of the other. A colleague in Montana, she says, so many times I hear myself drawing to scripture, forgive them, they know what not what they do. In this way, I feel bad that someone does or does not know how they have affected me. I know I have hurt people and they forgave me, and I never even knew it. Forgiveness is an important part of our spiritual self-care. Another friend in New York, if you can somehow manage to find it in your heart to forgive yourself, then you're on the road to forgiving everyone else. A friend from my old congregation, she says, time, and perspective, and their being dead doesn't hurt either. It's true. And someone says that he, from here, from this congregation, that he was never able to forgive his mother, who was a bright woman who had left him emotionally when he was only 3, so she could pursue his career. How he dealt with it, that he found that he had to move beyond the anger, but he stayed aloof from her. One of my old neighbors in Indianapolis told me, the one thing within my absolute and personal control is forgiving others, and I don't. Ever. I use it as a motivator to continually push myself to be better every day. I had to help him with that. He needed some care around that, and so I contacted him, and because he has 2 little boys, and I said, you know, you're teaching them that. Do you think we could find a different way? And he was so grateful because he's not a church person, so... someone else wrote about the anger about an ex and the violence in his fantasies that he would do. He said, eventually I got tired of it, of being so psychically violent, I guess. At that point, forgiveness was more like giving up a burden. And finally, from the moderator of the church council of my last congregation, he says, agape keeps coming to my mind, and I do not understand the many nuances of the word and the various ways it can be used, but I like this definition. An intentional response to promote well-being when responding to that which has generated ill-being. And amen to that. So, you know, I didn't utilize the beautiful reading today, but these stories needed to be told, and I know there's someone here today or a number of people that needed to hear them. I know that. I needed to hear them. You know, God forgives us all the time, just like in the reading, over and over and over again, unconditionally. And that's what we're expected to do, but it's hard. It is hard. You know, I believe that when we die and we haven't forgiven someone or forgiven ourselves, we're sent to some sort of spiritual boot camp. And there, the angels and the ancestors and Jesus and all the teachers and God herself sits with us, uses PowerPoints as need be, but probably mostly storytelling to awaken the memories of what we have put down and buried for so many years, like my friend Peter. You know, everything we do, we're still responsible for, even when we're forgiven. So let us, in the weeks and months to come, in our work, in our reflections, figure out the ways that we can do that. You know, how we can forgive, how we can ask for help. So in closing, we're just going to play a little video that speaks to this.